Let's go.
Okay, I think we're ready to go. Okay. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this 28th of August, 2012. Please join the Board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Thank you. Greetings to everyone. I will probably, depending upon the length of the meeting, if I do bug out around 11:15, the other two will go ahead and kind of continue in case we haven't quite finished.
We'll try to carry on.
But I'm going to try to get over to see the president this morning. Item number three is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the audience to address the board concerning a topic on today's agenda. Is there anyone that would like to comment at this time? Okay, seeing no one. We're going to pull item number four at this time, defer action on the minutes, so that will come back to us at the next board meeting. Then moving on down to personnel actions, looks like everything there is good to go.
Approval. Second.
Been moved and second. The approval of personnel action. Hearing no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Okay, personnel action approved. Under claims, we need, under item six, we need to add road closure number 1320. And number 1321, and we need utility permit 1324.
That would be under consent. Let's do claims first,
wait
and then,
a minute.
Then that'll be under consent.
Excuse me, that's under. Is that under? Oh, I'm sorry. She's got it written here under claims on your sheet. Thanks for a clarification.
Yep.
Okay, let's do just claims first of all.
Again, I told you this is going to fall to you once they go over a million, but at 300,000, I like this one okay. I'll move approval of claims this week.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded the approval of the claims. Hearing no further comment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Okay. Now back to that consent agenda, and I'll move that down. On the consent agenda, we have added road closure, as I indicated, 1320, 1321, and utility permit 1324. Would also call your attention to that there is, under additional items, a little bit later in the agenda, we have an addendum, item number six, that I will address when we get to that. So, huh? 1324? Yeah, I mentioned that earlier. Okay.
Move approval of the consent agenda. Noted changes.
Second.
Been moved and second the approval of the consent agenda with noted changes. A roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay. No public hearing, and then we move on to additional items. Number one is to consider to proclaim September 2012 as a recovery month in Story County. We have representatives from YSS here. This is an ongoing annual event. It is a recognition of the work that is done here in Story County as we look at addiction recovery month, and one of the things is this proclamation really addresses that we encourage relatives and friends of people with mental and substance abuse disorders to implement preventive measures and recognize the signs of the problem and guide those in need to appropriate treatment and recovery for support services. I think it is helpful to note that to help more people achieve this recovery and learn about recovery benefits, the nation's overall well-being, the Story County Board of Supervisors, Youth and Shelter Service, Arleigh Ball, and Community and Family Resources invite all residents of Story County to participate in the National Recovery Month prevention works. treatment is effective, people recover. And so, therefore, at this time, I would entertain a motion to approve the proclamation as I just gave a brief synopsis of what it contained.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and second to approve the proclamation designating the month of September as added Addiction Recovery Month. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Would you like a photograph of us holding this? All right. Thank you.
Apologize for not putting my tux on. It's such a case my guest is.
Have you three in the center here and have blank whatever says
you can be. Okay. We don't mind you being short.
I'll probably take a couple just to make sure, too. Well, one, two, three, smile. Okay, here's one more. One, two, three, smile.
All right, thank you. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, sure.
Okay, then moving on to consideration of the County Board of Health recommendation to the board to adopt a public notification policy. Environmental Health Director Margaret James. Margaret, I'll just have you come up just briefly. The question I'd like to ask is whether or not you have received any comments from either the public or staff regarding the seven-day review.
No, sir.
Okay. And so
move final approval. Second.
Okay, it's been moved and second for final approval of the seven-day review after the 7 day review for the public notification policy that will be effective immediately. Is that correct? Okay, with that, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, thank you. And thank you. And look forward to working in this area. Okay, item number three is the discussion and consideration of the final report of classification compensation study, and this is brought to us from Springstead, Inc. HR Director Alyssa Wignall will give us the background regarding this proposal.
Good morning. This is the final copy, the final report. They had brought you a draft probably about a month ago, a month and a half. I kind of lose track of time. So this has everything. It has their recommendations in it. It has all of the job descriptions that they updated. So it's you know, I don't know if you read through it. It's 193 pages. I do want to highlight just a couple things from there. There weren't a lot of compensation findings. When they did the salary survey, they kind of looked at other structures or compensation schedules. We're pretty in line with that. Most of them for non-union do not have steps in their scales, and we don't. One of the items, there were only 2 out of the 13 respondents that reported having some pay for performance. I think we're going to see that change in the next few years. That's something that companies are starting to roll out. In the past, they haven't had the pay for performance, but there were a couple of counties or cities that are currently doing that. So as far as benefits, under the benefit findings, the only area that I saw there was a difference in vacation, the average after an employee's been here 20 years, most of them get 5 weeks of vacation. We get 4. So that was the only difference there. Health insurance was really tough to compare with the way we do. If you look at just the contributions that the county puts towards health insurance, we are way under what everybody else does because we do the flexible benefit cash. So it's really hard. You look at the report, and our percentages are very low, but we also have to take into consideration that the majority of our employees take that benefit as cash and they don't get the county's insurance. So if you look at that, what Springstead did, they took all of the information, they took the new job descriptions, they evaluated all of those. Each job description was evaluated on 9 different factors. I don't think a lot of individuals don't understand how a job description's graded. There's a lot of different factors. You can't just look at somebody working in an office and think that their job's going to grade out more than somebody working out in animal control. There are working conditions, hazards. That all plays a big part in how a position is graded out. So they went ahead and did all of that. They put together the positions and how they're graded. We have 17 grades. It doesn't end at 17, but that is just how our positions grade out. They also developed a new compensation schedule based on all of the salary survey information. We did a 40% range, so each grade from minimum to max is 40. There's a 40% spread, and then there's 7% in between each grade. Prior, our scale went from it varied based on the grade. So when Springstead put this together, they I talked with them, and to get a little bit more consistency, we had each grade have a 40% spread. If they look at our non-union positions, if the board would implement the new compensation schedule, there would be about a $71,000 annual. That would be our implication on an annual basis to bring everybody up to the minimum. We only had a few positions that were over, which is really good. If you look at the positions that were actually under the minimum, it was our entry-level, mid-level positions. None of our department heads or the higher-level positions came in under the maximum or under the minimum for their grades. One thing that's not included in this that actually will be my responsibility is to put together a compensation policy, and that's just a work in progress trying to figure out exactly how the board wants to go with this. So that's something that's not included. That wasn't anything Springstead did for us. That is on my plate. Do you have any questions with the final report?
Well, I think the final report is definitely a starting point that will engage further discussion. I think it clearly gives us parameters by which we can not only compare ourselves, but look at the market that we are concerned about, and also the fair and equitable treatment of our employees. Now, the question that comes into play again, as you mentioned, the decision time to factor in that discussion, whether we make some adjustments for those that are somewhat below, and when that would be best to consider that is another situation, because no dollars were tied to this particular compensation study for this upcoming fiscal year. So would we have to, from your standpoint, this would be something that you would bring back to us at a later time if you thought that we needed to act upon this before the end of this current FY?
Yeah, we didn't know exactly what the implication was going to be. I guessed around $50,000 to $60,000, which isn't too,
that's not too far
off. During budget time, there might have been a little bit that wasn't budgeted, but kind of we knew this was coming. I'm not sure we have. The implication is spread over 3 different funds.
Right.
So it's very difficult when we look at that. Our general fund didn't have a huge implication. There was quite a bit in the rural and quite a bit in the mental health fund based on this new compensation schedule. So that would be something that, I wouldn't be comfortable right now saying, we could go ahead and implement it this fiscal year. It would be have to have discussions with the auditor and look at the budgets and see what the capacity is.
So the other question I have is, as it relates to the performance measures that is yet to come, as we begin to take a look at that, are you contemplating setting up some tutorial or educational sessions with our department heads in terms of how what I call I hate to use the word best practice, but things that have proven to be an effective way of instituting performance measures so that we can develop a degree of consistency, because I think that is really going to be the big issue anytime you talk about across-the-board changes in terms of performance. Are we consistent in terms of how we're evaluating our employees? Or are you contemplating a need to set up and schedule time for staff to be engaged in those type of discussions as well?
Yeah, that would be, that's a separate piece, obviously, from this. That's our performance management piece. What I would see, it's going to take a lot of training. It's a different piece. Our department heads and managers are not used to evaluating employees on that type of a performance management piece. It involves a lot of metrics and different things like that. So that is something that would require some training. There's also a training for the employees so that they completely understand what they're being evaluated on, so they don't just get that performance management review and not understand. The piece that Springstead drafted for us directly relates to their job. It's based on their job description. So that's the best way to evaluate whether an employee is effectively doing their job. I mean, you look at each essential function, and are they capable of performing that? And that's the evaluation piece that I hope the board will put into place in the future. Tying a pay for performance raise to it is probably a couple of years in the future. It's going to take at least a year of doing those evaluations so that the department heads and management is comfortable doing them. It also gives a baseline so that I can see, okay, last year there was no raise tied to it, and your employees, you know, were they more honest when there was no raise? Did they, you know, were they inflated when the next year when we were looking at, you know, a 2% raise tied to it? So, you know, it's always good to have one year that doesn't have that incentive tied to it.
Okay. So as we look at what is brought before us today, is it primarily the consideration of the job description portion, the updated job description portion?
Yeah, you just need to accept the report in. You don't have to agree with anything in the report, but just accept that this is the final report from Springstead, and that class and that survey and study is actually done. And then whether you want to go ahead and approve the updated job descriptions by Springstead, when you do that, they will go out to all the employees. The department heads and management have looked at them, reviewed them.
Yes.
Now they'll go out to the employees and they'll sign off. We do have some changes. Some of them were made system-wide job descriptions, the administrative assistants. So now we don't have 8 or 10 different administrative assistant job descriptions. We have 2 for the county. And that will be a change, and the employees might want to look at that and have some discussions.
Questions?
So for today, we are receiving the report, acknowledging receipt of the report. Lay out for me, as you envision it, a timeline behind approving the contents of this report, since we're not doing that today. And then are you picturing that really when we start budget conversations for FY14 is when we're going to start dealing with some of the financial considerations that are in there?
That's probably the reality. When I first saw this report come back in June or July, I was thinking, you know, January we might be able to look and see if there are any funds. We're pushing September, so it probably looks more likely it would be next July before you can implement a new compensation schedule. We have to realize that the current one is based on this fiscal year, so it will fluctuate based on the market a little bit. So we could see the implication go from $70,000 a little bit more, because each fiscal year we need to evaluate the pay scales and make sure we're increasing them to be competitive. And I have no idea exactly what percent that would go up. Some of them this year went up 1 to 3%. It just depends. If the economy's good, it's going to go up a little bit more. If we have a bad, you know, if things don't look real good, it won't fluctuate a lot.
When do you envision us dealing with the contents of this report, approving the job description so that they can get out to other staff other than just department heads?
That can be done today.
I did put that on. As far as approving the job descriptions, it could be done today. I could bring it back in 2 weeks if you guys want to review all of the job descriptions.
I thought I heard you say earlier that there were a couple updates that aren't in this, a couple things that in job descriptions that had been updated.
The new IT one,
okay,
which you already approved.
Okay.
And then there will be one for community services next week that's coming
right
next week. So if you if you'd like to wait until and do that, I mean it's a little bit different. It's not a grading. The one in community service has no grading implications. It stayed the same, but they had a they're having a retirement, so they can kind of combine two positions.
Yep.
So.
And I think that's reasonable to assume that even though we have defined job descriptions, as some of the internal structure changes within a department, it will come to, again, an analysis to look at how that restructuring fits into the whole total plan. So it's not without some tweaking or some bringing it back for specific cases. But I think this is the broad concept that we're looking at.
A lot of the job descriptions hadn't been updated for years. And my main concern is the ADA requirements. When I have to send a job description out to a physician so they can list what an employee's restrictions are for them to come back to work, that needs to be up to date. And those were not up to date. They were some of them were the same, and they didn't look at the position. It's like they just copied and pasted a paragraph into each job description. So. But I do want to note that if the board approves the updated job descriptions, that's just the job description. We're not scoring them on the old compensation schedule. It doesn't mean that they updated or they're taking into consideration the new compensation schedule. It's just the actual content of the job description has been updated.
Rick, do I hear maybe a desire to maybe wait another week or so? Or not?
No. With the explanation, yeah.
Okay.
We put them in, and since we're dealing with the financial implications down the road, I mean, that's something that's going to require some fairly serious conversation.
I think that was a discussion we had when we approved this idea that you know, it was going to take some discussion on how to get to where we needed to be once we got the report. So I'll move acceptance of the the updated job descriptions and the report from Springstead.
Second.
It's been moved and second to accept the updated job descriptions as presented from Springstead, Inc. Is there further discussion at this time? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Alyssa, and the board will eagerly look forward to working with you as we navigate through this process.
Work's not done yet, is it?
No. Okay. Then moving on to item 4, consideration of the site development plan of application for zoning permit, a commercial industrial zoning permit for construction of a golf facility located at 923-300-405 in Section 23 of Washington Township. And since you're not Charlie, Leanne, welcome, Planning and Zoning Director.
This is an error on my part. Normally these are placed on your consent agenda. This is a zoning permit review. Just for background information, this is part of the Jensen Conditional Use Permit that was approved by the Board of Adjustment earlier this month. And it's for the Golf Performance Facility south on Highway 69, south of City of Ames. So there's your background information. We recommend approval of the zoning.
Yeah, considering it's dang near complete.
Yeah.
I was stunned with this. This popped up right here. Yeah.
Right. Okay, so it's more procedural at this point. Is that correct?
Move approval.
Okay.
Been moved and second, the approval of the site development plan application for the golf facility as indicated. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Thank you, Leanne. Okay. Item 5, it's consideration of Resolution 1314, consideration of the final subdivision plat of Dobbs Subdivision located on certain lands under the ownership of John and Mary Dobbs, located in Section 1 of Franklin Township. Okay, take it away.
This is the first residential parcel subdivision that the board has seen come through, and from this point on, unless there's some controversy or all the issues are not addressed, these will be on your consent agenda as well. As it is the first one out, we wanted to make sure that you had the background information presented in a public format. Internally, this is processed with case number SUB05-12. As the chairman said, this is Dodd Subdivision Final Plat, resolution number 13-14. General property location, it's at the E911 address of 55229 170th Street, generally to the northeast of the city of Ames and east of the city of Gilbert in Section 1 of Franklin Township. It's a little under 6 acres, 5.72 acres in size, currently zoned A1, and has a land use classification through the Story County Assessor's Office as residential. It is located in Cooperative Planning Area Tier 3 of our county development plan, the county's land use plan, and it does lie within 2 miles of the city of Gilbert. It is outside the 2 mile of the city of Ames. I do want to point that out. And so the Ames Urban Fringe Plan does not apply. The city of Gilbert does have right to extend their 2 mile extraterritorial authority to this plat. However, on August 4th, they did choose to waive their subdivision review authority in favor of Story County. And as I stated at the beginning, this is a residential parcel subdivision to ultimately create 2 development lots that's set forth in Section 6.60 of the Land Development Regulations. This is an aerial view of the property, and those in light blue were those notified within a quarter mile of today's meeting. And as you can see in the lower right-hand corner, I guess it's actually difficult to see. There's a little oval there that shows the general property location, but it gets a little muddied up there. But, again, it's northeast and east of Gilbert, northeast of Ames and east of Gilbert. These are the criteria that are outlined in the land development regulations as applied to residential parcel subdivision. I'm not going to go through each of these because, one, they were spelled out in the staff report. Two, we just discussed these in great detail earlier this summer as you adopted this process and regulations and put in place. But I will say all these requirements are satisfied with the subdivision plat. And this is the intended subdivision plat, again, creating 2 lots. Lot 1 will contain the existing homestead, and Lot 2, which is on the west side of the property, will contain a little under 1.5 acres and is intended for new development. All the requirements as set forth in the regulations relating to the plat are satisfied as well. In the staff report, there were some comments put forth by the county auditor's office, and all those were addressed prior to actually even getting materials on the agenda for last Thursday. Your alternatives are on the screen. You may approve resolution number 1314 as proposed and add conditions if necessary. You may approve it simply as proposed. You may deny it. Lastly, you may table it for more information from staff or the applicant.
This is exactly what we had in mind when we went through all the minor subdivision requirements that we updated, right? I mean,
yeah. This was the property I referenced several times to you and members of the public and surveyors as we discussed the possible alternatives we could consider for the 35-acre minimum.
Yeah, I mean, I'll move option 2, approve resolution 1314 as proposed.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to the approval of resolution 1314 as proposed. Is there further discussion?
I just want to thank the Dodds family for being the guinea pig on our first.
Absolutely.
And Jeff's patience, how about that?
Yeah, Jeff, I know it took a lot longer than you had hoped, but I appreciate you going through the process to get us here. I think we've got a really good, workable model to let these kind of things happen, which I believe is completely appropriate. So thanks.
But thank you. Don't need to add any more to that, so thank you. With that, roll call. So is this Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Resolution 1314 is adopted. Okay.
And there's no plans to pave the road in the near future, so just get that out of the way.
Get that out of the way. Okay. All righty. Okay, then moving on, as I indicated earlier, item 6 was a document that was brought before the board. It was a consideration of Story County as a fiscal sponsor for our Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque grant for the benefit of the American Legion, and this was being brought forth by Brett McLean. He asked if I would read this statement and enter into the record, and that is, I had planned on attending this morning Board of Supervisors meeting. However, Luke Jensen is out of the office on sick leave, and in order to keep the office open, I needed to stay there. The American Legion has asked for Story County Veterans Affairs Department to be a government sponsor for our grant, and deadlines for this grant is this Friday, 8/31/12. The most they will receive is $4,229. This check would come to the county, and then the county would pay a vendor to replace a 40-year-old heating or air conditioning unit. Brett has been in constant communication with Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley regarding the process and the role that the county would play as a fiscal agent in dealing with this, and has received assurance that this should not be an issue and so forth. So, Board, I just wanted to share that letter from Brett.
I'll move approval. If you read through the grant application, apparently the furnaces, the heat exchanger is full of cracks.
Right.
At the Legion Hall here in Nevada, and they need a new furnace.
Yeah, and I'll second it, and the only stipulation I want placed on it is there can't be any out-of-pocket costs to Story County for us assuming this responsibility of being the fiscal agent.
Right. Okay. So, who was making the motion of that?
I made the motion. Okay. I second it, but I wanted to underscore the one stipulation.
So the motion before us is the approval of the accepting Story County as a fiscal sponsor for the Community Foundation of Greater Des Moines grant, and with the note that Story County would have no out-of-pocket financial involvement regarding the administration of this grant. With that, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item 6 is adopted. Okay, moving on down to item 10, updated discussion on College and Whirly Creek, physical map revision. Planning and Zoning Director, Planning and Development Director, Leanne Harder.
First of all, I just want to let you know what the sheet that says in circles 1 through 10 is all about, because it's actually not related to the physical map revision. It's floodplain, and so I took advantage of being up here. This is the schedule that the City of Ames has put together for the public outreach in regards to the flood mitigation study that they've undertaken and are paying a consultant to help develop. I just wanted you to have an opportunity to see the scheduled meetings and the different phases. And then if you have any questions, let me know. And if you want to share this with members of the public, that would probably be appropriate as well. But that's what that is all about. Okay, now to a physical map revision, a PMR. A PMR is simply a way that FEMA revises multiple panels of the National Flood Insurance Rate Map, the firm. In 2008 and 2006, until 2008, Story County through FEMA was remapped in total. And you adopted, or a previous board adopted, a new flood insurance study. What a physical map revision does, it just takes parts of that. So it's not a parcel specific, that's a different process, but it's several acres of land contiguous that go on different panels, and a panel is a segment of the map, and does new hydrological and hydraulic studies, new flood studies from the get-go for that panel or multiple panels. This is underway currently. It's an effort that's being led by the DNR in cooperation with FEMA. A consultant has been brought on board. They're AMEC. I think they're the same ones that are doing the hazard mitigation plan for Story County as well. This was funding that was left over from the flooding of 2008, the CDBG disaster funding that is being used by DNR to fund this. A lot of issues were identified with both College Creek and Whirly Creek. The majority of College Creek does lie within the City of Ames. However, the majority of Whirly Creek under the study does lie in the unincorporated areas of Story County. I wanted to come to you today because we're in that point where some preliminary maps have been completed and studies have been undertaken, but they've not been presented to you for official review. Once they begin, they are presented to you for official review, and that is intended to incur February of next year. Basically, we have little or no opportunity. Well, it's mostly no opportunity to expect any revisions to occur on those maps. You can appeal it, but it's a lengthy, arduous process to appeal. What the consultants, DNR and FEMA, are doing with this approach is letting us have a more improved dialogue to see changes that need to occur to the map and ensure that those can occur before you ask to take official action. What I wanted to come to you today for was to show you the website so you know that it is out there and you can look at it and then get some direction on the amount of public outreach you would like to see Story County Planning and Development undertake with property owners. What I'm going to try to do, if I can be successful, we do have internet access. I'm not going to spend a lot of time explaining the website. I think the link was on the agenda, at least the presentation that AMEC gave to us in late July was on the agenda. But this is the website that AMEC has put together. I just want to quickly zoom in, though, in one area. Worley Creek for Story County has been problematic from the get-go. If you'll recall, the bridge along R-38, when it was constructed, we required a floodplain permit from the county engineer's office. What was ironic about that is the floodplain map, as developed by FEMA, actually didn't even match up to the creek. So technically, Darren could have built that bridge without a permit because it did not lie in, according to the map, floodplain. As a floodplain manager and administrator of that, the firms for Story County, we are bound to that mapped boundary.
Where does that show? Where does it show it coming through?
Oh yeah, I'll zoom in here. So what AMEC has done is they have studied with hydraulics, hydrology, what the actual floodplain layer should be. I'm too close in. And they've put together some preliminary maps. The areas in red are in the floodplain now, but they were not. The areas in yellow were to begin with, and they still are. They didn't change. Those in green go away. And they were originally mapped, but now they're not. So if you look at this whole area in here, it basically shifts to the south. And in actuality, if I were able to zoom in and show you the aerial, which I won't be able to because of some limitations, the entire floodplain was mapped incorrectly, shifted to the north.
Which is up at the top of a hill.
Yes.
Right, right.
Yes. Several property owners have gone through the process of having letters of map amendments done up. This is a review process by FEMA to essentially change the map for that specific house, structure, parcel, whatever the application was for. What this does is this will supersede those, which is fine because it is a much improved product. It does add, as the floodplain manager for Story County, I'm very pleased to see that this is one of the areas where the PMR is being brought forward. We've not had to internally pay for this additional study, so it's beneficial, and this is an area where we see some demand for development, and I do think the current placement of the floodplain has hindered that to some degree, some cause for additional study. So I'm here for you today to, one, show you this, and I'm not going to go over in great detail. You can go under flood study review, double-click it, and the meeting agenda, that PowerPoint that was given in end of July is there, and that was what was on your agenda. Meeting attendees was there. This website will continually be updated by the consultants as new studies are completed, and so that we may have a hands-on ability to review and have a constant dialogue with the developer of the map so that we can get the best information possible. What I'd like to do is, with your blessing, do a couple things. One, send notices to all the property owners in this area saying, just quite simply, your property may be in the floodplain, and directing them to this website. And then I'd like to set up a whether it's one or two public open meeting or public meetings, workshops with them. I might do this in conjunction with the City of Ames, so that they're not sending people in, invitations out to those inside city limits for one meeting.
I would say automatically do it that way. Don't just might there, because I believe we're going to need that level of cooperation. If you remember some of the prior years where we've had this ongoing dialogue about, you know, this area, I think the more that we can be on the same page, the better as we move forward with this.
We're looking at 40 to 50 property owners. It definitely will fall within our budget for postage and mailing.
And just so that I'm clear, those are all property owners that live outside of Ames. We're not notifying anybody inside.
We will not notify.
Of Ames.
That will be okay. Ames's.
Yeah, I would suggest that we go ahead and fulfill our responsibility and notify Ames that, hey, we're sending out notices to these 40 or 50 that are in the county outside of Ames. And then if Ames chooses to go ahead and notify those people again, that's Ames's call. But that'd be my suggestion, absolutely.
And what I'll try to do is get the meeting held here, if possible, or somewhere where we can hold a conference call, because the consultants cannot come here, but they are more than glad to, if we have internet access, walk everyone through the site, talk about very detailed specifics on hydrology and hydraulics, and be present via conference call, which will be fantastic, because all I'll be able to do is say, here's the H&H report, read it, and look to your engineer to explain it to you. But for a lot of people, this will have a very positive benefit. There are a couple of property owners that it will put more of their property in the floodplain, but the structure should not be impacted. So overall, it should have a positive net effect.
Well, yeah, it looks to me, I mean, just as a layperson sitting here, there's more green on there than there is red. I mean, it looks to me like it's going to reduce the scope of the floodplain, probably down in more into the creek bed, you know, creek bed and just beyond.
Yeah, when you are asked to take action, basically what you'll be asked to take action on is what's yellow and red, ultimately.
And green just goes away.
Green will go away.
Leanne, what's interesting is how did we get here now, when several years ago when the map study was done throughout Story County and we determined that there were errors in numerous places, we got nowhere. I mean, they weren't willing to even look at any type of revisions. So basically, how did we end up getting to this point where now we have a defined area and they've identified that through, is this the same firm or a different group?
No. And there's a combination of many factors. One, this is a different firm. And the firm, the D firm, Digital Flood Insurance Rate Map, that Story County, in total, all of Story County, all the communities, had to adopt in February 2008, was part of the initial stages of the map modernization process. That's gone away now. We're now into risk map. And the thought process from FEMA's standpoint has evolved, and they're focusing more on the watershed levels, whether it be a larger watershed like the Des Moines watershed, you know, South Raccoon, or down to the sub-watershed level. And this is an example at sub-watershed level. They've really tightened the ability for those or the qualifications necessary for those engineering firms to do work. And because this is a partnership with the DNR directly and the community, the jurisdictions of Ames, Story County, and FEMA, I think the dialogue is more open.
That's good to know.
And right, no, it is not the same firm at all.
Good, good. Okay. Are there other questions?
Yeah, so tell me one more time what direction you're looking for from us.
I just want to hear it was okay to go ahead and send notifications out and go ahead and try to set some public meetings, and I'll work with City of Ames to coordinate those meeting times and dates.
I would say go.
Yep, no question. Yep, you bet. Thank you. Okay. Okay, then moving on to item 11, agency reports. Don't have any. Departmental reports, none. Liaison assignments and committee updates. Paul?
No. Pass.
Very briefly, I met with Deb Shilroth yesterday just for a brief update on just a couple items. One is the meetings with the surrounding counties regarding forming a region. She said is moving along very positive. They are in the process of trying to put together some financial data to look at the total number of cases as well as the projected dollar figure that would be involved in the administration of this. And then they plan in October to set up a meeting again with all the boards of supervisors of those, with representatives of the board of supervisors of those respective counties, so that they can hear where they are and have any questions that might be answered. So that was just part of an update at this point. She's also shared with me that from the meeting with Polk County, it was an informative meeting where they just kind of was doing some feelers in terms of whether Warren, Dallas, and Story would be interested in entering into some type of futuristic view of the region. I think we could probably say that that is not a unanimous decision by the Polk County Board. There are some that wants to expand outside of Polk County. There are some asking for the waiver. But at this point, they're willing to explore options to see where things are. And so we may hear more about that at a later date. And then the other little small piece is just the ongoing audit situation involving Richmond Center. State has not been successful in getting all the necessary information or documentation that they needed based on the request that was submitted. And so they have issued a deadline as to when they would like to have this. And I believe the understanding that is if for some reason they're not able to supply the documentation that is needed, that they clearly state what that they cannot and a reason or rationale for why that information cannot be made available. And then a decision will be made at that point what's the next step and where to go from that. So we'll continue to hear something about the progress regarding the audit from the Richmond Center at a later date. So with that, that was about all that I had from my discussion with her. Okay. Moving on to item 14, public forum number 2. This is an item that is not on the agenda. The board may not take any action. Is there anyone that would like to comment regarding another topic? Okay. Seeing no one. Announcements from the supervisors. Mr. Toot?
I just wanted to note that the sheriff cleans up pretty well, and that's all I had.
Well, I'd also like to note that, Paul, you were gone a week ago when I put in the record the announcement of your most recent appointment. You know, I'd like the chair to just ask you, maybe just come up and tell us just a little bit about this net. I forgot the actual title. It's a 12-member board involving broadband and connectivity. And I received a directive from Homeland Security and of your appointment, and perhaps you can might just give us a brief comment regarding what plans are out there for this committee.
Certainly. This is something that I've actually been involved with.
Oh, is it off? See if it's off.
Okay, there. This actually began in 2007 when the FCC appointed me to the Public Safety Spectrum Trust Board. And through the president's signing of the law this past February, it created what's called the FirstNet Board. That's an acronym for the First Responders Network Authority. And that directs the Secretary of Commerce to appoint 12 people to the FirstNet board, which is a board of 15. The three permanent members on this board is the Attorney General, the United States Secretary of Commerce, or I'm sorry, the United States Secretary of Homeland Security, and the Director of the Office of Management and Budget. And then the Commerce Secretary picked 12 other people across the United States to serve on this board. This will be a nationwide broadband network that will be created, and the law also provides $7 billion for the initial build-out of this spectrum. This will be for public safety across the United States, coast to coast, border to border, urban and rural as well, and I assume that's one of the reasons why I was selected to be on this board as well. So we're looking forward to it. You remember what President Eisenhower began in the late 1950s with the interstate system. This is going to be the interstate system for first responders on communications. It will not replace our voice system. It will work compatibly with voice system, and eventually we're hoping voice will move to that spectrum. But right now this is to move data. So as a quick example, for law enforcement, we will be able to have, if there's a crime going on, someone on the street corner will be able to video that with their smartphone, stream that video to the dispatch center, who will in turn be able to stream that to responding officers so they know what's going on and see the crime as it unfolds. Fire agencies will be able to have floor plans streamed to them as they're en route to scene, showing where hazardous materials are, where entrance and exits points to the building are, and other safety schematics. And for an ambulance situation, especially for those jurisdictions who are a long way from a hospital, when the paramedics pull up, they will be able to put the devices on the patients while they're still in the ditch, like in a car accident. They will be able to stream that information real time to the emergency room, and the doctors will begin to triage and diagnose and treat that patient while they're still in the ditch. This is truly remarkable, and of course, these are only just some sample apps, but the apps out there for all public safety are just exploding. So we will have that opportunity through a hardened network, and in time of crisis, when the commercial cell providers are shutting down because of overload, first responders will still have their network that will be running and operating.
$7 billion close to the right amount that's going to be needed for the build-out coast to coast? I mean, to me, that doesn't sound like enough money to build out the infrastructure.
I don't speak for the office of
budget. I'm just asking your opinion.
My opinion, no, it won't. It will get us started. It's a great start to do this. But when you look at what we have for the nation's security, for the service of people all throughout this country in fire, EMS, and law enforcement, is something that has been truly lacking. But the $7 billion will be a good initial start. It will get us moving certainly in the right direction, a good jump start to that. But that will not be the final amount that it will take.
Is there any identification of an ongoing funding source to continue to grow?
Yes, there is. And part of that is the spectrum that we have now, where public safety started out, where the FCC allocated 10 megahertz of spectrum. The last few years, we've been involved in this campaign at Congress and the White House and Justice to have the other 10 megahertz, known as the D block, partnered up with law enforcement's 10 megahertz. That was part of the president's bill that he signed, so now we have 20 megahertz of spectrum. Now, larger cities, New York, the Bay Area, Florida, they may have times when on day-to-day they'll use a lot of that spectrum. But the vast majority of the country will not be able to use that spectrum unless in time of emergencies, like hurricanes, tornadoes, an attack, something of that magnitude. And during that time, we also will be able to sell back underused spectrum or lease that spectrum to the providers. Now, the key point here is, as we lease that spectrum back, if we just would have purchased spectrum, we would have got it at a commercial grade, which would not have given us the strength in time of emergencies, but also it would not have given us access to that spectrum and critical times when we really needed it. This is a network that will be controlled by public safety, so when we have the need, we have it right now. So we have those opportunities. This will also ensure a public-private partnership, which will help us to build out these devices through a single standard that will be deployed. That will then, the vendors will build to that same standard, which will tremendously reduce costs. One of the reasons cost for communication today is so expensive is since the 1950s, the FCC would always give us more spectrum when we needed it. The problem was they gave it to us in disparate bands. So now we have six different bands that we have to communicate on, and none of them are interoperable. Now with the 20 megahertz, all data that we're going to be building the spectrum to deliver will be built on one spectrum band, and it will also, all the devices will be built to a standard formation to fit that.
So the board you've been appointed to will make the initial decisions of what we're building out, what kind of contracts we're offering to commercial providers, things like that? I mean,
the charge of the board is to create, develop, and then ongoing maintenance of this system. So this isn't a board that will end in 5 years. This is a board that will be ongoing indefinitely, and will be also charged with keeping the spectrum moving. With the rapid changing that we see in today's technologies, you buy a brand new state-of-the-art computer today, in 6 months, it's old news. And so that's how fast this technology is changing. And with all the vendors out there, the new apps that are online that we're hearing about that's going to be coming out in the next few months, that's just going to be an ongoing situation for us. So we're going to have to be able to work with this spectrum to make sure it's a living, breathing item that adapts to all our needs currently and future needs down the road.
And this is a three-year appointment, so, and I thought that was, again, allows for the continuity of the commission and so forth. So
Congress allows for two consecutive three-year terms, and I was actually given starting out as a two-year term, which means I would have the longest tenure of anyone.
But that won't count as one of those three-year
right.
terms. Right.
So it will be... possibly a longer term than just the original six that's outlined by the law.
Very good. Thank you. Anything else good for the cause?
It's all good.
It's all good. You're dressed up. Thank you so much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. It's a great honor, and again, to have a representative from Story County play such a role on the national level is really special in itself. Okay.
Move adjournment.
Second.
Been moved and second. Hearing no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Meeting is adjourned. Question, Shelley. This document has...